This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is 2025, believe it or not, and I guess it's time for us to get back in the swing of things. This will be the first Thursday Coast of 2025. So welcome back. And of course, we're happy as always to have with us the founder of the largest online progressive community, Marcos, dailycoast.com. Marcos is with us. Hey, buddy, how are you, man?
Doing good. Happy New Year's. Happy New Year's to everybody watching and listening.
Indeed. And Happy New Year's, folks. And I know many of us are just getting back into the swing of things. Lord have mercy.
I'm getting dragged and, you know, kicking and screaming into the swing of things. I want more vacation.
and because it was nice just to unwind, and we've all kind of been licking our wounds as well. And folks, I think what I'm going to do is also share some of this ongoing coverage of Jimmy Carter and his service, which is wrapping up right now at the National Cathedral. First of all, Marcos, your thoughts about Jimmy Carter and the service today?
You know, I've spent the last few years doing some real deep personal trauma healing, and I've been working with psychedelics, and a lot of it based on just my, you know, growing up in a war zone and having to flee my country, and essentially being a war refugee. And what's been fascinating in that process is that, like, the person I've been working with, my healer, my therapist, once asked me who my sort of like spirit animal was. What did I want to embody? And I immediately said, Jimmy Carter is my spirit animal, because that's what I wanted. His calmness, his presence, his call to service, his strength and humility without being, you know, without being like false humble. Like, he clearly was an impressive person that commanded attention, but he did so in a way that was not, you know, bragging and obnoxious and narcissistic. And it was just this real calm, serene presence and call to service. And I see that, and I'm like, that's what I want to be. And I'm not anywhere near that. But as a sort of something to aspire to, I was like, that's, if I could come within, you know, a million miles of what Jimmy Carter is at the time is, and now what he was, I would be a good person. I would feel like I actually accomplished something real. So he has been pretty much a role model in my own, you know, efforts to be a better human being. And so, yeah, he looms large, and not because of what he accomplished or what he didn't accomplish, but really just because of that energy that he had, that just beautiful, serene, calm, strong, and purposeful energy. Like, I want more of that.
Yeah.
Could we get that in our public servants?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, as we see the hearse at the National Cathedral leaving, and my understanding is that they will go to Andrews Air Force Base and then fly to Plains, the church where he taught Sunday school for decades at the Baptist church there in Plains, and then he will have a private ceremony and then be interned in the family burial place in Plains, Georgia. That's what's taking, you know, one of the things that, a couple of things stood out to me today. First of all, the scripture that was read, you know, in terms of being of the spirit as opposed to of the flesh and sin. And they say Jimmy Carter planned his funeral decades ago, but I wonder if they changed the scripture, whether he was just that prophetic, Marcos, that he was talking about the sins of the flesh and the lack of spirit with Donald Trump sitting there in the pew. I mean, how could he have known that would be read? I mean, that first scripture really applied to Trump. And then to hear Gerald Ford's son talk about how even the two of them talked about Palestine coming home on Air Force One after Anwar Sadat's funeral, the legendary friendship that culminated after both of their losses, Ford and Carter's. And then lastly, for Andy Young to deliver the eulogy, and people may not recall the significance of that. Andy Young was fired by Jimmy Carter as UN ambassador. First of all, to get that job was important. That was Carter's nod, so to speak, to the legacy of Dr. King. When he appointed Andy Young to be ambassador to the UN, one of Dr. King's lieutenants, that was a continuation of Jimmy Carter's commitment to the legacy of Dr. King. He was, after all, as governor, put the King portrait or statue in the Georgia State Capitol, which had never been there before. He gave Dr. King posthumously the Presidential Medal of Freedom. You know, y'all think about it, just how close things are in time. Jimmy Carter was elected president just 8 years after Dr. King's assassination. Hadn't even been a decade. That's how fresh that was. So when he gave Andy Young that job, and then Andy Young met without permission and in secrecy with the PLO, which violated U.S. foreign policy at the time, and under pressure, Jimmy Carter fired him. It said a lot for him to have still asked Jimmy Carter to have still asked Andy Young to deliver the eulogy today. And to your point, it speaks to the type of spirit that he had, the type of person that he was, a very humble man. And folks, you know, I think even in a larger lesson, and also reference what you were saying, all of us suffer setbacks in life. All of us experience trauma. Jimmy Carter, no differently. I mean, most of us will never know what it's like to grow up in a house without electricity, to work on a farm. It's not a luxurious life. But when we're faced with these things, to still decide to make your life meaningful and worth something and to serve others, I think that's the real lesson. Not that he was the 39th president, but he lost. He lost, and still, some of us lose a job and never recover. Some of us lose a spouse and never recover. Jimmy Carter lost the presidency in a way that was disgraceful. I think I shared with you, Mark, because I haven't posted it yet, but I found a clip of Sam Donaldson asking Jimmy Carter, are the hostages free, on his way down the podium to inaugurate Reagan? And Jimmy said, not yet. And then as soon as Reagan said, I do solemnly swear, the plane took off from Tehran. So we know what that was. I mean, that was the most transparent demonstration I could find of that. But yet he still did not stop in trying to live a meaningful life on behalf of other people.
Mark, what happened to the Bushes? Both of them.
They lauded it. That's the funny thing about it. All these former presidents laud Jimmy. Oh, Jimmy Carter was so great. And I'm like, well, why not be like Marcos and say, maybe I want to try to be like, be like him, or be like that, or build some houses, or just anything.
And it infuriates me that these evangelicals are, you know, voting for Trump and demonize Jimmy Carter, and he lives the life that supposedly their religion calls for.
Yeah,
And yet they literally worship a man who is everything that it supposedly disdains.
That's right. That's right.
And this is, to me, it's a reminder, and it's a little raw and makes me angry, and it shouldn't make me angry. But these people made, even just performatively going to church, a litmus test.
Right, right,
and
right.
Trump doesn't even pretend. He doesn't even play that game. Yeah. And they don't care. Just runs hollow how the religion. And then here's Jimmy Carter teaching Sunday school for decades, even though he's a former president. Like, how can you not look at that and sort of have to force yourself to re-examine what your religion actually means to you and what morality looks like?
And folks, this history has not really been documented, but, you know, I'm back in school. Maybe there's something called for me to do. Jimmy Carter was truly an evangelical. But the evangelicals met with Reagan to help them to defeat him. And this is now what we've wrought. So now they cast their lot with people who do not represent what a true evangelical is supposed to represent. Now, just a little bit of history. I don't know if you're aware of this, Marco. So part of the issue at that time with Falwell and others, and the reason they married Reagan, was at that time, and I don't think this was a decision of Jimmy Carter's. He just happened to be a decision of the IRS or some court that Jimmy Carter got blamed for. But at that time, again, we're talking about the 70s, y'all. We're still 20 years from Brown versus Board. And the some of the private schools who were run by evangelical organizations were tax exempt. And there was some type of ruling that made them no longer tax exempt. And that's what really triggered, even more than Roe at first, the original war of the evangelical movement against Democrats and against Jimmy Carter. There's a little history on that, not a comprehensive one, but these were some of the dynamics. Jimmy Carter at times was just a victim of wrong place, wrong time. But that's what led to that. So, you know, you're right. A great man. People uphold the faith and evangelicalism. He stood up against his denomination, the Southern Baptist Convention, for racism and for sexism. And it took a lot of courage to do in that time. And so we admire him that. But just one other thing. When Jimmy Carter was elected, I was 9, about to turn 10. I turned 10 one month later. We all remember the first president we recognized as a kid. I actually remember Nixon, because I didn't really know everything. I knew something bad was happening, but he would come on TV at night, because every night we all had dinner at the same time with my grandmother, and Walter Cronkite was on every night. That's what he was on TV every night. When no cable on CNN. And I remember seeing Nixon and how he would shake his jaws and talk this way. I just thought he was a scary, fun-looking man as a kid, you know.
Uh-huh.
I was aware of that. But what would also happen was Jimmy Carter's proximity to the Black community prompted every political cartoonist, I don't know if you remember this, Marcos, to portray him in sort of a minstrel caricature. All of the drawings, he had big lips and a big smile, just like a minstrel. And even as a kid, I said, something is off about this. And of course, I came to realize they portrayed him that way because he was a white politician from the South who did not deny his relationship with Black people. And you know, literally had no problem with that. So again, he was a great man, as we watched the hearse on his way to Andrews Air Force Base. And folks, this is the incredible logistics of the authorities in Washington. You do not see another vehicle, and this is a very busy thoroughfare.
I've been watching that.
There is not another vehicle. This looks like Rock Creek Parkway, I think. There's not a car on there. Not that the weather's great. Folks in D.C. love an excuse to stay home, too. School's closed. Business is closed for the funeral. I'm down. That's what, I'm all for it. But anyway, man, glad to have you back. So let's talk a little bit about, well, maybe should we commiserate anymore? Or what do we need to do? And we try to stay motivated. Nobody wants to do it. I don't want to do anything.
I actually think we need to give ourselves some grace. Republicans have the trifecta. So there's really not much for us to do other than kind of point and laugh at them, because they're stumbling all over the place. Obviously, Trump has already walked back his promise to lower prices. He says he can't actually do that. Today, Elon Musk said, I guess we can't really cut $2 trillion. Somebody he finally took a look at the federal budget, apparently, and he can't cut $2 trillion, but maybe he can get to $1 trillion. Obviously, they're not going to get to anything. They're a bit of a shit show, and they have their one seat majority in the House. And so they're all arguing, the House and the Senate is arguing whether to have two bills or one bill, but they had to do it through budget reconciliation to get through the filibuster in the Senate. I actually don't understand why they don't eliminate the filibuster. I'm a little confused about that. But so they're arguing over, can they really pass a bill with that one seat margin? And of course, every Republican is stepping up with their own demand. So you have the SALT caucus, right? The state and local taxes caucus. Basically, it's Republicans from California, New York, and New Jersey who are being penalized in the tax code. Republicans are saying, we won't vote for this bill, any bill, unless it eliminates the SALT restrictions. They may cave, they may not, but everybody's sort of kind of making their demands and playing hardball. And so I'm not sure they're going to get much of anything done legislatively. And honestly, at this point, there's not much that we can do. So what we can do is just keep pointing out how cruel their budgets are, how ridiculous they are. You know, Donald Trump talking about, I don't know why he wants to start a war with freaking Canada and wants to take over Greenland. And like, he's just insane at this point. Like, he is absolutely insane. And so I think people are going to have to like remember that have to remember what a Trump, you know, White House looks like, because they clearly forgot over 4 years. And our job is less like, there's no women's march. There's no real resistance. Really, Trump won the popular vote. And so it's sort of like, okay, this is what you voted for. Is this really what you voted for? Oh, he says he was going to lower grocery prices, but between his tariffs and mass deportations, all the prices are going up. Is this what you voted for? Yeah. Like, maybe listen next time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is crazy, Mark. I don't know if you noticed this, but it's people did, they believed his lies. They did not believe his truths. And then whatever was left, they filled in the blanks with their own thing, right? So whatever lies he said about Democrats, about Kamala Harris, he believed that. But he says, I'm gonna mass deportations. People are like, he didn't really say that. He's just only gonna deport the criminals. No, that's not what he said.
Right.
And you see this time and time again, right? So like, the budget right now cuts money for rural schools. Rural America voted for Trump like 75%. To 25. They're going to lose their Department of Education funding. The autism community, they're going to lose funding for autism programs. This stuff is not profitable. It's expensive. That's why the federal government takes it on.
Yeah.
And there was, what was that? In the Washington Post, there was somebody quoted saying, like, she was really excited that Trump was going to take on healthcare executives. Trump never, he didn't even lie about it. He didn't say anything. He just didn't even talk about it. And his body of record shows that he's for the rich and powerful. Why would somebody believe that he's going to take on the rich and powerful healthcare executive lobby? Like, it is absolute bonkers. So I don't know what to do, Mark, except sit back, point, and say, is this what you wanted?
Yeah.
Oh, they're deporting your friends. Is that what you wanted? Oh, your prices went up. Is that what you wanted? Because we told them, and there's a nice long record of us saying what a Trump White House would look like. So it is now our job, I think, just to point and point out the consequences of that vote, and then invite them to make a different decision in 2 years and in 4 years. Absolutely.
Well, you always remind us that that's the inevitable pendulum of American politics anyway. You know, the party in power tends to lose. And first of all, let's remind everyone something else you've always pointed out to us. We did, I think we did again, the popular vote in terms of the House seats was in our favor overall. But again, when you have the gerrymandering and that type of stuff going on, so it's not like we just got beat when it came to the House. So again, that'll come up in 2 years. And I do think the Democratic caucus and Hakeem Jeffries, as they've done in the past, will do a good job of exposing mm-hmm. the dysfunction. Not to mention, they've also proven already, I guess people had amnesia in November, that they don't even really have any ideas, Marcos.
No.
They don't even come up with, well, let's actually do something that somebody can point to and say we did. Never happens. I mean, it just doesn't. And because they really kind of have this notion that government should go away, especially the federal government, and not function, which is a paradox, because why are you running for an office in a federal government that you want to shut down other than to just sabotage it? Mm-hmm. Or maybe, in fact,
well, a lot of them do. Yeah.
Right. And maybe, in fact, all of you are wittingly some and unwittingly others agents of a foreign government whose job it is to sabotage and stop and grind to a halt. There's that. So we, you know, I think we'll be a loyal opposition. I think if we won't have to raise much of a finger to show the contradictions. They usually make their own doofus mistakes. They're going to do that well. I'm kind of surprised they got together. I don't know who had to pay off whom to buy those last few votes for Mike Johnson. I guess somebody said, look, y'all, we can't do this because we won't.
Well, I mean, it was they can't certify Trump's victory. That was it. That was the ball game. Because there's nobody else that wants the job, not even that can't get the job. Nobody else wants the job. They know it's a shit show of a job, and they know it's destined to lose. And the American system, political system, is really kind of designed to fail, right? It's designed to make it incredibly difficult to pass anything and to punish the party in power, because you got to get, what, through the White House, two chambers of Congress, and then even a Supreme Court. Right. And to get through that whole gauntlet, most things fall, like most things fail. So it's really difficult to enact change. Some people think that's a feature. Some people think that's a bug. Probably both. But I mean, I'm still like, cannot believe that Trump is allowing the filibuster to remain in the Senate, because you'd think it would make their life a lot easier to eliminate it. It tells me that a lot of Republicans don't want to pass Trump's agenda. They want the filibuster as a backstop.
Yeah. So how much of an opportunity have you had to look at what happened? There's still some unanswered questions for me. This, folks, and now the numbers, we got all the numbers. Marcos, this was really a damn close election, Warren.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just, again, really, folks want to look at the overall thing. I shared reporting with someone, with Marcos the other day, and the 19 million voters, Biden voters that stayed home. But you almost can't look at it that way. You got to look at these handful of battleground states. It was so close in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, and at least, and I had the numbers. I'll get you to respond while I look at these numbers. Kamala actually outperformed Joe in a couple of those places in 2020. So then it makes you wonder, what in the hell? And I mean, Trump, I mean, it was not a landslide. It was not a mandate by any stretch of the imagination. It was almost as if that weaving thing he does happened with the electorate and electoral results. It was just kind of a weave. And I think over time, as history goes forward, people are going to look at this election, look at these numbers and say, this is really unprecedented. It was odd.
Yeah, I want to... 19 million less people voted for Kamala Harris and voted for Joe Biden, but that margin was nowhere near that in the battleground states. It just shows the power of a get out the vote operation. I just want to make sure that people that really worked their butts off for GOTV, it actually mattered, because the whole country shifted 6 points to the right, if you look at nationally. But in the battleground states, it only shifted about a point, right? And I always say a good field operation is worth 2 to 3 points. It can be offset by their field operation. Republicans had no field operation, right? So it was just a broad vibes election where, without really Trump working on the ground, was able to shift the country 6 points. We almost won because of the ground operation. So I just want to make sure everybody who worked and busted their butts and worked in those battleground states, like, you did what you were supposed to do. And we came damn close because of that effort. I actually think it outperformed what you would expect a GOTV operation to do. So there's that. A lot of that was in California, New York, places like that, where there wasn't a lot. I mean, it's a electoral college, right? So, you know, your vote maybe doesn't matter as much in California, because California is clearly going to go vote for Harris. So if you don't get your butt off the ground, okay, great. And so there wasn't that like desire to punish Trump that we saw in 2020, which really helped Joe Biden at the time. Mm-hmm. And that cost us in the popular vote. But I don't know if it cost us in the battleground states, because again, the shift was so freaking slight in the battleground states. So it was a close election. I think Trump and his people have stopped talking about the massive landslide victory, because it was so ludicrous. So it was a very, very close election. And this sort of speaks to this broad, we've talked about this for the last year, this idea that we are a 51-49 Democratic country, 51% Democratic, 49% Republican, roughly. That means if everything goes well and all our people turn out to vote, which again, we saw this year, it's harder to do than to say, we're going to win. But everything has to go right.
Everything.
Their voters are more reliable than our voters. So that's a disadvantage. What we need is to go from 51-49 to a 55-45% country. Like, we're talking just shifting 4 points to the left. And then you have a 10-point buffer. You shift only 4 points, but now it's a 55-45, you have a 10-point buffer. So if the whole country shifts to the right 6 points, you still win. That is our long-term goal. There's obviously the how are we going to win the House and the Senate next year, and we can have those battles, and those are more immediate. But the broader picture, if you want to think of the strategic battleground, what do we need to do to really, really lock in a progressive American majority? That's what we need to do. It's 4 points. And it's obviously, again, like everything else, it's harder said than done. But when I look at what work people are doing to sort of change the culture and change the politics of our country, that's what I'm looking for, is who's working on locking down young voters and getting them to turn out? Who's looking at you know, Black and brown people and offsetting the work that Republicans are doing to chip away at our advantages with those demographics? Because, you know, Mark, they're going to be looking at Black women next, right? They're going to be working on building out a way to chip into Democratic support amongst Black women, because that's what they do, and they're pretty good at it. They don't need to win those votes. They just need to chip away.
Right.
And we need to figure out how to deal. And Mark, I would love to have a couple episodes in the future on the issues with young men, because it is a serious challenge to us. There is a crisis amongst young men that is driving them to the fascist right, that is dangerous politically, but also I think from a moral standpoint is challenging. I think progressivism demonized the male, and particularly white men, and so it's just drove them away. And that's not to say use the R word and, you know, be misogynistic and harass women. Like, what is that? What is that balance, right? How do you get to a place where you're educating young men into being good members of society without blaming them for what the patriarchy has brought and wrought to our society, right? I mean, these are like challenges that we really need to figure out, because, you know, just basically telling men to shut up and let others speak, it's not wrong on the merits. It is wrong on the politics, and it's wrong on the morality. Like, these are human beings. So I'm not sure what that answer is. I'm not pretending to know what the answer is, but it's something that I really want people to understand has to be considered. And I know a lot of people are rolling their eyes, and it's always about men. We lost the election because of men. If you want to win, you cannot drive 60%, 65% of men into the Republican Party and hope to win. Just not going to happen.
But did anybody on our side really do that, or has this social media slash podcast Joe Rogan culture kind of metastasized this incel piece? See, I don't get me wrong. I mean, I know that there have been people on our side who have been critical of the patriarchy and perhaps even men in general, but I don't think it's to the same proportion as the whining about it coming from the Joe Rogans and the others. And so that's kind of they're in other words, again, we're back almost to the Limbaugh era, where their media is dominating the discourse, right? So they're the ones that are able to push the point. Oh, Marcos and Mark and feminazis hate men. And they push that. And then it feeds also into this whole side discussion on incel and where are the women? Wow. It's almost like a misogyny masking as male victimization. Why do women have so much power? Why do women have so many opinions? Why are women demanding so much of us? It's a resentment of women. You know, so your point is well made, but, you know, it's not just about us driving people away. What are they doing that we're not doing? I think we know the answer. To draw in and propagandize and radicalize. You know, you don't have to blow up a bomb in front of a hotel to be radicalized by some ideology. ISIS ain't the only ones in the radicalization business, y'all. So they're radicalizing these young men to be angry incels, and rather than having men look at themselves and do a self-assessment, as we all have been trying to do in this period. Well, why don't I have a girlfriend? Why doesn't somebody want to marry me? You know, I didn't colonize this country, but maybe there's something else about me that I need to get together. It has nothing to do with politics. That has nothing to do with Trump. As a young man, how am I presenting and moving in such a way to make me desirable to a woman? And I don't know the answer, so I just go hook up with Joe Rogan and get that mad, and then I hate everybody. It's dangerous.
Joe Rogan and Andrew Tate, they're not helping these men get laid either. They're just making them angrier that they're not getting laid.
Right.
Like, there's literally, that's almost the frame, right?
Right.
Like, if these men were getting laid, I think they'd be a lot different.
Oh yeah.
So,
and they don't know, they don't understand why they're not. It's, you know, they were, you know, some of them have personality issues, they're misraised, but anger is not attractive to a woman.
No, of course not. So yeah, and to your point, I think there is a lot in progressivism that sort of treats the patriarchy as an evil, but also does not say, not you, young man, you can be part of the solution. And that's the piece that the Joe Rogans and the Andrew Tate sort of have taken advantage of. And that's what they're often running. Because there's always examples of somebody, you know, blaming young men for things that they aren't to blame for. And it's sort of that kind of energy that you see in, I mean, you know this well with the reparations movement, right, Mark? Where like, I wasn't a slave owner. Why this, right?
Right.
How do you smooth those feelings? How do you lower that temperature to have these conversations that teach men a healthy form of masculinity that isn't just, you know, that helps them get laid, but is nurturing to women, is it creates safety containers, is about being good providers to their families and being kind and uplifting those around them, as opposed to, you know, aggro, testosterone fueled Andrew Tate style misogyny. And that has to happen. Those voices need to emerge. And I thought somebody like Tim Walz was a great example of what like healthy masculinity looks like. And we need those examples at a national scale to give young men something to aspire to that also fulfills the need for connection. And we can say, oh, they want to get laid and laugh about that. But I think it goes deeper than that. I think these men, by and large, really want connection. And they don't know anymore how to properly connect. And they're not getting proper instruction. And Joe Rogan's certainly not teaching them how to connect and have those deep connections. And so that's going to be a piece that we need, because these young men are dangerous.
Yeah.
If they're disgruntled, and they don't have to be. I mean, obviously you're always going to have fringe, but I'm saying this is beyond the fringe now. Like, this is an actually much larger movement. And even the whole idea of the incel is, it's a victim mentality, right? It's everything they've accused people of color being for a long time. Oh, they just want to be victims. Like, these men have fallen for that. Like, they're actually want to be victims. It's an explanation for all their ills and why they can't talk to women and why they lead unhealthy, unfulfilled lives. And a lot of them are driven to violence, but the vast majority won't. But the vast majority are getting to the point where they're becoming solid Republican votes. And that's where I think, as much as you may want to roll your eyes at the challenges of young men and to voting for Republicans, and if we want to win elections, we cannot cede a ginormous gender gap to Republican Party with men.
Yeah.
Because it's very clear that the gender gap, as big as it is now, is benefiting them more than it's benefiting us.
Yeah. Real talk. So let me try to do something here. I want to share a couple things before we go. And again, it's the new year, first Thursday Coast of the Year 2025. Folks, welcome, one and all. Share this with whomever. Now, let me see if I can do this, because I was up late in the middle of the night. I should have been doing something else. But I was doing this, just kind of crunching some numbers. And I want to see if I can do this. And see if this will work. Can you see that, Marcos? I don't know if you can see that or not. It's kind of small. How about now?
Okay, yeah, that helps.
So, folks, if I'm just trying to show some of these numbers. So there's Pennsylvania. She lost Pennsylvania by only 121,454 votes. And when we look at the turnout, Biden actually got only about 40,000 votes more than Kamala Harris. All right. I just want people to keep that in mind. This is how close this election was. So when we say the 19 million didn't turn out in the battleground states, it wasn't like the same proportion of millions and millions or thousands and thousands. She came close. You see, Biden got 3,459,000. She got 3,421,000. This was the difference. Okay. When you look at that in Pennsylvania, that shows you how close it was. Now let's move on. Let's look at Michigan. She lost Michigan by only 80,000 votes in a national election. That's not a lot of votes. Again, Biden, she got 2.7. Biden got 2.8 million. So again, it wasn't like, oh my God, it was so many, many, many people who voted in Michigan as compared to 2020. All right, Wisconsin, real tight, lost by less than 30,000 votes, Kamala Harris did. And let me just back up. See, Trump's vote totals didn't even go up that much. Look, let me go back to Michigan. You see that, Marcos? He got 607 more votes in 2024 than he got in 2020.
Uh-huh.
Look at that, y'all. He only picked up, you know, because we look at it in, he literally got only 600 more votes.
Uh-huh.
All right. She gets the 80,000, just that mere 80,000. We're having a different conversation in Michigan. Wisconsin lost by under 30. Trump, Kamala Harris got more votes than Joe Biden.
Yeah.
In Wisconsin in 2020. She got 37,015 more votes than him. And I have the Senate numbers there too. Also, which kind of deals with this notion of whether or not there were some people that split tickets. There was in these states I've shown you, there wasn't a whole lot of ticket split. That wasn't what was going on. Okay, let's just go on to, let me see if I can go to the next page. Here we are. So here is Nevada. Tight. 50,000 votes. Mm-hmm. Less than 50,000. She got more votes than Joe Biden in Nevada. Mm-hmm. Look at that. And again, Jackie Rosen, Senate.
You know, and you don't see, like, here, you know, Donald Trump has 750,000 votes. Jackie Rosen won with 701,000 votes. So right. This is what makes actually analyzing this election even more difficult, because there is such a dramatic undervote among people turned out to vote for Donald Trump and nothing else. Are those really Republicans? Because they didn't vote for all the Republicans on the ticket. Otherwise, they would have won those Senate races in all the states that Trump won. And in fact, the only state in which Republicans picked up in a battleground state was Pennsylvania. Democrats held Senate seats in Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada, and they won the governorship in North Carolina, although obviously that was extenuating circumstances because the Republican was such a disaster. But that makes it hard, like, because usually you kind of use the proxy of the presidential vote as a Democratic vote, and it's always sort of worked. And then this year suddenly it kind of doesn't work anymore because Trump did so much better than the bottom of the ticket. So what happens once again when he's no longer on the ballot?
Yeah.
Which is going to happen in the next two elections.
One more, Arizona. Joe Biden did a little bit better in Arizona, but still she lost Arizona by less than 200,000. There you see Gallego, to your point.
Yeah.
1676 million, Trump 1770. Yeah, this is very interesting.
And Arizona's it's an odd state too, because you had about 200,000 people from California move to Arizona in the last 4 years, and most of those were conservatives.
Sure.
And so there was an influx of conservative Californians to Arizona that made it difficult to hold. Those are kind of challenges. You're seeing the reverse actually in Georgia, where you're seeing a lot of liberals from Florida starting to move to Georgia because they're giving up on Florida. And so there's also these migration patterns that I've been starting to look at because they're absolutely fascinating. And I'm going to be writing about that in the next couple months for sure.
Okay. You'll be writing in 2 months or within the next couple of months?
Yeah, maybe, next couple of months. It's whatever.
In 60 days, he may write again. You know, we may write.
About this topic, there's a lot of number crunching involved, so it's a little bit more involved than. And yes, Mark, I will admit I am still trying to like motivate to get back in the swing of things. And I have to say that Daily Kos, we have 5 new writers and they're killing it. So it takes away some of my pressure to write sometimes in a good way and in a bad way. Because I do like to write. But I just need to get back in the swing. And maybe January 7th. Is today the 7th? 9th. Maybe January 9th is still too soon.
Yeah, we still don't know what date it is, y'all. We 2 days. I know. Listen, it's hard enough after the holidays getting back in the swing of things. These holidays hit different. Everybody I talked to,
they just really did.
And nobody. And look, I'll say this. I don't have a problem saying it. So, 20 years ago, helped to organize the shadow inauguration of Bush. And that's how I ended up in Fahrenheit 9/11. Unbeknownst to me, they took a clip of that and they put it in the movie. Michael Moore put it in the movie. So I'm a veteran at shadow and count inaugurations. So I applied for the permit. The media even called me, wanted to talk to me about doing something this. I mean, I put in that permit early in case Trump won, but everybody is so decimated and nobody wants to do anything. And for the first time in history, the permitting authorities gave more space to demonstrate than ever before. I mean, I was like, really? And they were like, yeah, you know, First Amendment, Mark. I said, okay. I said, you sure? Yeah, First Amendment. What are y'all going to do? I said, well, nobody wants to do anything. Are you sure? And now these are people who work for the government. Are you sure? You sure you don't want to do something? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, he said, but really, you know, we're going to give you the space. It's, don't worry, we got the space. And I had to kind of, and the reason for that is with this 2025, a lot of the regular civil servants that do that type of work, they didn't mind. They wouldn't have minded if we showed up on the 20th. Mm-hmm. Because they're coming for people's jobs.
Yeah.
Nobody is really enamored with this. Oh, you know, just zippity-doo-dah. No. Nobody knows what this is going to be and what Trump is going to do. As the casket arrives at Andrews, I don't want to take up too much of Marcos's time. Just one, a couple other things. Your home state, you're not in the area, but California, our concerns go out to people.
Yeah. Yeah. And my son, it looks like his National Guard unit is getting called up. So he'll be, yeah. So they'll be helping out recovery efforts.
Mm. Yeah. That's tough. That's one of our listeners just commented to pray for California. Let me do this quickly, just as I mentioned it, and just for historical reference. As I said, y'all, as we watched Jimmy Carter, some of you may recall this over the years. This is how Jimmy Carter used to be portrayed by the political cartoon media. Mm. See that?
Yeah.
Always looked like that. And there was a reason for that, that minstrelish look.
Right.
And as a kid, I mean, I'm 10 years old. Like, where have I seen that imagery before? He was always portrayed that way. Now look at those presidents. No other president looks like that in that portrayal. There was even hold on, I got to do this while we're here. There was one more. There was a cartoon where Jimmy Carter was made to look like, here it is, made to look like even Barack Obama.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, that's kind of what that's how Jimmy Carter was presented, folks, and that was its own form of propaganda. Great man, as we watch, he is about to be born from the hearse to Air Force One's or Air Force Special Mission 39, as it is called. Great man, and Marcos is a great man. You'll be all right, man. It's not too late for you to emulate Jimmy Carter. Oh, I know what I got to ask you. Maybe now is the time for you to run for chair of the party again.
No, we got Ben Wickler. Ben Wickler's freaking amazing. Chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. He's legit. He is absolutely legit.
I like Ben, but let me, somebody we both know, I'm going to put him out and name him. And I was like, I was talking to them. They said, what is so hard about this? They said, Mark, let me tell you what you don't understand. I said, what? Chairing a Democratic Party, especially as an opposition party that doesn't have a White House, your real job is to raise a minimum of $50 million a year. And no one wants to, nor has the energy to do that. And right then I understood why a lot of people we would have expected to jump in the ring were like,
Ben Wickler's my number one choice. If I had to pick anybody anywhere, he would be my number one choice.
Really? Okay.
He is an organizational, he's got the energy, but he, organizationally, his ability to message, his ability to hustle and bring people together and get them to do the field type of organizing that kept it close in Wisconsin when the rest of the country shifted 8 points or 6 points to the right, is exactly that. I've known Ben for a long, long time, and he gets it. Even the idea, like, Mark, I've never understood. Coke and Pepsi, they don't just advertise, you know, 3 months before quarterly earnings are due. They advertise year round because building a brand is an ongoing, never ceasing process. Why do Democrats spend, what, probably $1 billion in ads just a few months before the election when the whole thing is saturated and people have tuned out? I don't understand. So even things like that, where the idea of actually spending money to build that brand, to repair it, because it's got to be repaired. Democratic Party brand is broken. To repair that brand, it's not a right before the election thing. It's ongoing, and you got to do it. And so even simple things like that, which I've never understood, and of course it comes down to money, but money is, Mark, money is there. Like, how much money did we spend as a party? We outspent Donald Trump 3-1 to lose. Maybe dumping in all the money to TV ads the few months before the election, maybe that's not the smartest thing to do. We have this conversation every freaking cycle. And I mean, it's one thing if you're you know, a House candidate and nobody knows and you need to like say, hey, here I am. Okay, then maybe you need to spend that money. But as a party, we haven't done a good job of really working to deliver our message year round all the time. And particularly now when nobody is tuning out political ads because you're not overwhelmed by them.
Right.
Now would be the time to use paid media to say, Donald Trump just proposed this. Is this really what you wanted when you voted for him? Do stuff like that year round. You don't have to spend a lot of money.
And by the same token, when we're talking about brand is also in media. Remember, our party conceded all that ground to Rush Limbaugh on Fox News. They weren't interested in making that type of investment. Joe Rogan is a brand. Mm-hmm. And that is promoted. And so that's what we got to get. So hopefully, you know, this new party will figure that out and do it. But I thought I'd give it a try, you know, because I told you, if you
oh, like, no,
I love a nice chair, but, you know, you probably wouldn't be me.
Now, Ben is legit. I am 100,000% behind Ben. And I'm rooting hard for him.
Now, we do know this, though. If that did happen, Marcos and me, running the party, Trump would resign within an hour. He would resign the presidency. I don't want to deal with Marcos and Mark. I mean, he would just drop. He'd be like, I'd be like, where's he going? He's gone. And I can't handle it. It would just be too much. So he better be thankful.
You know, to that point, Mark, you know, the more, like, it's funny because we really have to root for Donald Trump to survive for 4 years. Like, we cannot, he is such a, he's such a disorganized mess that it actually limits his ability to do damage. You better believe it. J.D. Vance is president with Peter Thiel, his puppet master. They would very efficiently dismantle this government. So we got to, unfortunately, we have to root for Donald Trump to last at least 3 years.
That's a sobering thought.
We do not want J.D. Vance.
And hopefully they won't come up with a way to extend Trump's to repeal the amendment that limits to 2 terms. I know
that ain't gonna happen.
I don't know about this SCOTUS, man. I don't know.
It's flat out in the amendment, so there's no way to get around that. I mean,
what will the sentencing mean tomorrow, you think? I mean, what will come? I mean, what? He's not going to get anything anytime.
No, they'll put him on like probation. You can't give him time. I mean, and I don't think the crime really calls for that as a first offense. So it's maybe if he'd lost the election, he'd get like home detention or something like that, which he would love anyway. But nah, it's just a last little bit of an FU to him, if nothing else, unfortunately.
All the more reason why, Biden, you should pardon Marcus Garvey and Marilyn Mosby and Ravi Rockbeer and other people like that. And if I were Biden, I would commute the sentence, the jail terms, for every single nonviolent drug offender.
Ah, you should do that. Are there many in federal prison?
I don't know.
Because you can't do state, and a lot of that is state.
That's right, yeah.
But there might be some federal ones, I don't know. But if there is, for sure.
Yeah, we hadn't talked since he made this decision on the death penalty. That was good.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So, as we see the family boarding Air Force Special Mission 39 to take Jimmy Carter home to lay down beside his wife of 77 years. Everybody who's listening, look at your spouse right now and ask yourself, could you be with that person for 77 years? And if not, maybe that's the time, as Marcos is doing his own self-examination, and all of us are, for all of us to self-examine our relationships. Think about what it would take for y'all to spend 77 years together, and what you need to change about you, and what they need to change about themselves. Mm-hmm. Hello, just a little word for you as they board the flight. Thank you, buddy. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Girl, Happy New Year to you.
Safety to your son. So when you say they're doing recovery, what is it? Are they not actually going to be fighting fires?
No. I have no idea. Usually it's helping clean up and directing traffic and doing that sort of thing.
Yeah,
they're not trained to fight fires.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marcos. Happy 2025. Right. Happy 2025 to the whole Daily Coast family, to all our listeners. We're not stopping. We can't stop. Harry Tubman didn't have time to get depressed and say,
oh, it's a different strategy. But
gotta keep going.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. Thanks so much. Catch you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.